Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. Welcome to A Burkamp Wonderland. I shall introduce my three esteemed Holy Trinity of guests that I have this evening. Firstly, we'll start with the main man himself, Jeff. How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Thank you very much. It's nice to hear your dulcet tones hosting tonight. I'm sure that you'll be better than the Reverend Raj, that's for sure. So good luck, mate. See how we go.
I don't want to start some kind of internal politics with that, but yeah, I bet I am.
Well, he'll just call that. He'll call the racist card again, won't he? You know what he does. That's his game.
Yes, that's true. That is true. Right, on to our next guest. We've got Steve over in Poland. How's it going over there, Steve?
Yeah, it's fine. Nice sunny autumn day, and now it's dark. And I finally condescended to Danny's wishes and plugged in the Ethernet. So it's 250 megabytes a second all the way here today. Window shut, no Warsaw Fire Brigade interruption. So off we go.
Excellent. And finally, my final guest, which I think Carl was trying to sabotage his arrival for this, but you've made it, Fife. How's it going?
I'm not going to lie, I am fuming with Carl. So, hi, I'm very well, thank you. Just so the guests know, Carl has been sabotaging not only my journey home tonight, but in general, my quality of life I'm sure he plays with the overgrounds and the DLRs just as I'm about to get on them. And so added a 1.5 hour diversion home tonight. So thanks for Carl. I can't wait to see you soon in the pub.
We'll have to get a hashtag started for him at some point.
I was thinking of doing a diss track. If I have time, I might write one in the background and as the little outro.
We should do that. Maybe it will change up for our intro music. We'll just change it to that for a bit. But let's move on to the games that we had this week. We'll start with the Carabao Cup, Arsenal versus Brentford. The 3-1 win. There ended up drawing Blackpool at home in the next round. Steve, did you catch this game?
Yeah, it was a very difficult game to catch because actually it wasn't on TV anywhere, and I was forced to watch it on stream. So sort of like it was a bit like being in jet lag. Sort of like you're watching it, and the Arsenal players telling you things which have happened you haven't seen yet. Brentford were quite as I suspected, well organised team who want to play proper football, and obviously we made our chances and we took them. I think the biggest surprise was that we put quite a strong side out for this competition, a competition in the past we've historically used to put kids in. There were some younger players on display, but there were also quite a few first teamers on display as well. And I think the thing is that we've got to see that Emery's looking at every game now as a chance to see what will work, who works with who, and how he can, you know, fine tune the system and get as many players into it in game time experience as possible. But, you know, it was a result that we would have hoped for, 3-1, and we march on and we've got Blackpool at home, which is a pisser for Josh because he actually lives very near Blackpool now.
For my sins, yes. I won't go and diverge further into my new location, but should we say I was rather peeved that I don't get that game. Jeff, did you manage to see this one?
Yeah, I was over there. I was lucky enough to be able to attend the match. Yeah, so, quite what Steve says. To be honest, I think he put quite a strong team out from what we was used to, which I'm pleased about. I think he's doing it. I think he's trying to get these players the game time in this new system so they can really have a go at getting used to it. So as many as he can put out as possible, it's in the proper first team squad, he'll play them. But you know what? I think it was a little bit flattering, the scoreline. Brentford, they're a good side, that mob. You know, they play really well. They were set up properly. And they give us a few problems, especially the last 15, 20 minutes. And I was really disappointed that they scored, you know, because it's we want to keep them clean sheets. And but, you know, at the end of the day, it's another win for us. It keeps the run going. And that's what it's all about. It's, you know, you've got to keep going and keep the momentum. And the boys done well, thank God.
Yeah. What did you reckon to that free kick, seeing it in the flesh, so to speak?
Yeah, colossal.
Yeah. I think colossal. It was annoying, wasn't it? Because you're like, yeah. Well, there's nothing any goalkeeper can do about that. He's put it exactly where he's going to hit it.
A terrific goal.
Absolutely. Fife, was there anything you wanted to add for Brentford or Blackpool?
I've only seen highlights of the game, and I was very impressed with Mkhitaryan. It was nice to see Welbeck looking fresh again. I think we'll probably come on to the, you know, the impact he made against Watford, which was pretty it was pretty gargantuan. And one thing I would touch upon, and listen, I wasn't at the game actually. I tend to not go to Carabao Cup games so much, you know, not because I want to miss them, but when they first kind of, and I really like the ticketing system for the Carabao Cup. So my ticket, if I was to go, it's not part of my season ticket, but it's only a tenner, which I think is brilliant because, you know, it gets young kids and teenagers and people, I think, have been left behind by the, you know, the most by the new increasing costs of tickets, you know, across the leagues. And it was quite disappointing to see some of the photos from the upper tier where I think it looked like it was pretty much the entire top tier was empty. And obviously, Jeff, you can comment better than I can because you were there. And it just feels, you know, it's a real shame in terms of, a few years ago, that was the kind of game actually where, you know, the atmosphere might not be the best and you got some of the old guard, you know, moaning about how cringy it was about songs about Tottenham and or whatever. But it was mostly young kids that are having a great time. And it just seems a bit strange that it was so empty and so flat from that perspective, because this is the kind of game where we used to kind of get, you know, new fans and new blood and build that kind of loyalty with the young kids. So it's kind of strange to me why, because it's not like the price of the tickets have gone up. And if anything, actually, as you guys said, the quality of the players on the pitch was probably a little bit higher than usual for the competition so early. So that was one thing I was a little bit disappointed, actually. And I'm kind of surprised why there's been such a drop off in the attendance of these games.
It irks me that we don't have. I mean, you know, I remember over the years on Twitter, you used to hear it all the time. People are giving up their season tickets because they can't afford it, et cetera, et cetera. Now, which I can understand, but, you know, like they used to moan about families that can't go to football anymore, especially the locals, because of the price of the tickets. Well, you've got a game like that where, you know, you've got a £10 ticket. You should take hold of it and, you know, at least try and have a go and get in there. I mean, I was there and this central areas was quite packed, but the, like you said, the wings, the upper tier of the wings, there was very, all the upper tier was, you know, it was basically just, it was very, very sparse, but it's disappointing. I don't know what the attendance was.
So apparently it was 49,586, but I wasn't there to, I wasn't there to comment how true or not that was, but,
I would have thought more like 40,000, mate, to be honest with you. And that's being really, really modish, you know what I mean?
Do you think it's a historical issue that, you know, we haven't necessarily taken this competition seriously, or at least the team that's gone out doesn't look as serious? It's
fixture. We got to the final last year, didn't we? So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and over the years, as I say, it's never really... It's not been the first one on my, you know, I don't make sure I go to every Carabao Cup game. It's not because I turn my nose up, but it's always because I thought, actually, you know, for a tenner, I might as well let someone else have a chance, because it's always been, when I have gone, filled to the rafters with, you know, kids and young families and people who wouldn't usually be there. And I mean, genuinely full, every seat full. I was at what was the game we won? Is it 5-0, back or 6-1 years ago when Wilshere and Merida and those boys broke on the scene? That was a great night, a great atmosphere. And it's just, you know, it's almost like it's tailed off this season for some reason, which was strange, because, you know, as Jeff said, it's just a real shame. And it also kind of puts into doubt, you know, people have always said, you know, if you give up your season ticket, don't worry, there'll be someone ready to take your place. And you're like, well, will there? Because I'm just not sure. Yeah, it's just a bit of a strange one.
Yeah, I think we'll have to see how it turns out with Blackpool. I think the fact that Emery has put a really strong team out, and for a tenner, you got a chance of seeing someone like Mesut Ozil, Lacazette come onto the field, could be really interesting to see if we see a bigger uptake for that particular game. But let's slide over to Watford, the game from the weekend. A 2-0 victory from there. We took a while getting there, though, and it was a bumpy route. Jeff, what did you reckon to this game?
Yeah, well, you know what? I thought it was going to be a tricky game. Watford are in a decent run of form, aren't they? They've had a couple of scalps this year already. And they're obviously set up well. I don't know what the manager's name is. What's the manager's name? Anyone's got any?
Is it Javi Garcia?
Yeah, could be the chap. But he's obviously set them up right. They're really, really fit. They're always very, very aggressive. And as much as we hate him, the lad up top, the number nine,
Troy Deeney,
that's him, yeah. He's always very, very dangerous. He always keeps the ball you know, he always keeps the ball moving, and he's just dangerous. He's a right niggly bastard, and he was always causing trouble. But you know, ultimately, we just had too much for them. You know, they played very, very defensively. Watford was just one that held that, you know, 5-4, so we could try and play around them. But when we got there in the end, thank God, and I think we well deserved it. It could have been another one.
Yeah, Steve, we were quite narrow, I think, through most of that game. Eventually, with seeing the likes of Iwobi and Welbeck come on and add to the flanks. How did you think the game went overall, and with the changes that Emery was making?
Well, it was always, I mean, as Jeff said, it was always going to be a tough game. I mean, Watford got off to a tremendous start to the season. They've been really quite physical with other teams and getting bombing down with their little nasty albino thug who got away with about 8 fouls in the first half. And on the other side, Pereira. And, you know, they've got one of the best target men out there, Deeney up front, who also gets away with a lot of physical stuff. They were making their physical presence known. I think in the first half, we played very well to contain that. And I think that narrowness and that compactness of our shape helps us do that. I think that's what he wants to do. He wants to make the spaces between the Arsenal players smaller so the passes are shorter, so there's less chance of giving the ball away. You know, they had some chances, Watford. They didn't take them. Peter Cech saved a couple of them. In the second half, I mean, I've noticed recently that he switched Iwobi from starting to being sort of like a sub. And I think the reasoning behind that is Iwobi's got dreadful stamina. But Iwobi from 65 minutes at full blast till the end is quite a revelation and quite unpleasant for teams who've been, you know, running around like Watford were, closing down, pressing, blocking, to suddenly find someone who wants to run at them and find the spaces and get in behind them. And they just didn't have the gas to cope with him. And they didn't have the gas to cope with, the him coming on, the move that it made. Ramsey went off, Ozil moved into the middle. All of a sudden, the shape came back to the side. There's more fluency there. And then when Danny Welbeck came on, of course, it blocked up one side. Danny was doing a lot of closing down and it made the team more efficient. I think Emery's got far more of a, he's willing to change things through games. He's got a game plan. And I think that was all part of his game plan. And you know, we got an own goal that unsettled him a bit. It rather ruined their game plan. And then straight away, very shortly afterwards, we got the second goal and two good goals. Well, one good goal, one good own goal forced by Lacazette. But, you know, three very hard fought 1 points. And this is a team which probably last season would have either thrown that away or lost it through shit defending. And I thought our defence, even Mustafi, although he always has a fuck up because he can't stay on his feet, I thought both them, Cech and Leno, played very well. I mean, Leno came on and made a terrific save to deny someone at the far post. So, for me, it was a great 3 points, and it kept the run going, and we move on to, you know, the next game away.
And the clean sheet as well.
Fife, what did you reckon to the game? I know you've been crying out that we need width in this team, and there was a diagram going around on Twitter that I saw, I think I posted to our group as well, that, you know, you got Ozil, Ramsey, Aubameyang and Lacazette more or less on top of each other, getting in each other's way. So how do you think we solve an issue like that, other than, you know, bringing on the likes of Iwobi and Welbeck? Is it time to drop perhaps two of those four?
Certainly. Yeah. I think that when you look at the game, and let's look at the first half, let's take nothing away from Watford, as the guys have both said. You know, pagans of Serie A, for example, would love watching this Watford side. They don't particularly have superstars, but what they lack in, you know, in personnel, they more than make up for in their tactics. So they're extremely well drilled. They were organised off the ball. They were one of the best teams I've seen. I mean, the movement between Decore and Kapuwe in the middle was just so effective. And without the ball, they were, you know, they were always on us. They were chasing us down. They had, but they didn't do it in a way which lost their shape or. And it was a real breath of fresh air to see that from a team. It was very intelligent football. On the flips, I think that it kind of showed that it really took two moments of absolute quality and as Steve says, in-game management to change the tactics round for us to finally break Watford down. And for most part, and for you could argue in the first half they were very even. If you look at the game and overall, Watford had more than 50% more shots than us, more than 50% more shots on target. I'd say up until about the 70th minute, you could even make an argument for why Watford could potentially have deserved to be ahead at some point. I think when you look at our tactics, that front four, it really wasn't working. I think Ramsey and Aubameyang were barely even visible for most part of the game. There was a stat going around, and to what extent I don't know how true it was, but you know the three behind Lacazette, so Mesut, Rambo, and Aubameyang, there was a stat at half time that between them they only completed two forward passes in the front half. And as you say, there was no width in you know, you can see the maps for yourself. They're all kind of vying for those central positions. You know, we've bought Aubameyang, who's one of the best number nines in the world, and we're expecting him to play out left. We've got Ramsey, who to all intents and purposes, I don't know where his strongest position is, but I think he likes that number 10 role, a little bit like Nasri back in the day. And then Mesut, who again, we've pushed out wide to the right, but you can clearly see he wasn't playing there. And it just wasn't working. We weren't linking up well enough. You know, we weren't breaking down Watford. And, you know, Watford were hard to break down, but we weren't doing what we should be doing. And they just weren't functioning. And that really hurt us as well, going forward from wide positions. You know, Bellerin, it kind of showed when Mustafi was playing a lot of very lovely balls down for Bellerin. So when Mustafi gets the ball, you'll notice, if you watch him quite closely, as I do in the first half, because he plays just in front of where I sit, he will always look to play, you know, out inside of his boot down to as wide as he possibly can to get Bellerin in the game and to try and kickstart a run from Bellerin. And this is what Bellerin used to do, right? Well, Bellerin. So when Bellerin was younger, he would usually charge forward and knock a 1-2 off Theo, and then he'd hit the byline and get a crossover. As now, you know, you've got Mustafi hitting Bellerin. Bellerin will just stop with the ball and then try and cut inside or cut backwards because he has no option and no 1-2 to play it off of because there's just no whip with him. And it's kind of the same with Monreal, actually. We might come on to it, but one of Watford's best opportunities in the game came from a huge fuck-up down the left-hand side where Monreal was refusing to push forward even when Xhaka was, you know, chasing down and gallivanting with the ball. And once he played it to Monreal, Monreal just stopped and cut the ball inside, lost the ball, and was so far up the field that actually Watford broke away and really should have scored the opportunity in about the 80th minute. And I think that all came from just no real lack, or a real lack of width in this team. You know, very tactically, we're ill-disciplined players playing where they weren't supposed to be playing, and that really hampered us, not just going forward, but as I say, defensively. And I think we really need to solve this now because, you know, you're right, I have been talking about width for a long time, and I actually think Jeff and I might have disagreed about this in it was at the start of the season before last. It was when just after we drew one with PSG away, I remember we had a bit of a big one, and I said then, listen, width is a huge issue for us, and I can't think of a top wide player we've bought since Alexis Sanchez in 2014, to be honest with you. And over that time, we've been shredding wide men. We've been bringing them through the academy or cheap buys and selling them off, but we've never really bought any real, you know, top quality wide men who can, you know, hug wide areas, dribble from wide, dribbling, you know. And I think that's a real worry for me. And I've never been Iwobi's biggest fan, but I think it's fair to say he is playing extremely well under Emery and he's thriving in the new tactics. And actually, it might be time to give him a go because he seems, even though, again, he's a natural number 10, he does seem to be slightly more disciplined when it comes to playing in wider positions and he doesn't get as carried away. And it's the same with Mkhitaryan. It might be time to give one of those two a bit of a run, but it just certainly wasn't working and I think we need to change that around.
See, I think the thing is that Emery's, I think, first of all, as Arsenal fans, we've become conditioned over 22 years to accept and we can practically pick the team every week and we know what's going to happen. I think we've now got a manager who picks a side to beat a particular opponent and deploys particular tactics. and targets the opponent's weaknesses. And we heard Lacazette when he scored that rocket of a shot, I think it was against Cardiff, and they said to him, like, you know, wow, you know, what a shot. And he said, yeah, well, we knew from the videos that Carcedo gave us that this bloke can't handle strong shots. That's why I put my foot through it. So you can see that they're preparing differently for each game. But Emery wants us to be narrow and compact. He wants to stop us leaking goals. That's the first point. I think the thing with this sort of bunching up front, a lot of that's down to Ramsey's positional bad discipline. He, you know, if you look at that diagram that Josh put in the group, he's constantly popping up in a right-hand position. He's constantly popping up everywhere other than where he was told to be, and I think that's why he was removed. And he was very frustrated when he came off against Watford. But I think, you know, when you go and play a very well-drilled, organised side who've got pace like with Pereira and Hughes, and a good finisher up front, you've got to start off that game being narrow. I mean, I think, you know, the problem with who's going to be up front will solve itself because Ramsey won't be playing at Arsenal very much longer. And I think also it probably in the next two windows, you'll probably see some more casualties, I mean, maybe even big name ones, because Emery wants to get the players who can play in the system he wants. I think Mkhitaryan might be one of the ones that goes. I'm still not convinced that Iwobi is fit enough to play 90 minutes in like he was playing as a sub on Saturday. But I think, you know, at the moment, you know, things aren't as we would like them, but we're winning games and we're winning ugly. And I think we're not used to that as fans. I think we've got to, you know, look at winning seven games on the bounce and say, okay, well, it's not particularly, you know, Puritan how we'd like it, but it's points on the board and that's what matters.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. On Aaron Ramsey, Jeff, he's a man that seems to have gone from zero to hero to hero to zero in our fans' eyes across his kind of Arsenal career. Where do you kind of stand with him now under Emery? And I know we've got a few questions on this as well about his contract situation. How would you be handling this situation?
I just don't fancy him, to be honest with you. And I think Emery has sat down and thought, okay, this guy wants near on £300,000 a week, and he could most probably do better for the £300,000 a week. And maybe he just doesn't like him anyway. I've gone off him. I struggle with Aaron Ramsey. He had incredible potential. He had a good 6 months before he had a bad injury the second time when he scored all them goals at the start of the season a few years ago. But he hasn't recaptured that form since then. And he's been in and out of the team. Again, a few little niggly injuries here and there. But, you know, he wants to play, it looks like he wants to play his number 10 role. And I don't think he's good enough to play that role. You know, to play that kind of role, you have got to be a top, top class footballer that can affect the game. And I don't think he does. All right, he gets about the pitch. I don't really think he's got a lot of pace. If he was a bit quicker around the pitch, he would be better. But he hasn't got blistering pace. So, you know, my thoughts are I would, you know, oh, of course, try and make some money of him. But I do honestly believe that Emery thinks he can get someone better. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't play him in front of Ozil as a number 10. And I wouldn't even play him in front of Mkhitaryan as a number 10. I like Mkhitaryan. I think he's technically one of the best footballers at the club. And it's a shame that Emery, he appears not to fancy him, which is a big shame because I think he's a top player.
He seems to be playing every game, though, which doesn't seem indicative of a manager that doesn't fancy him. Unless he's trying to sound him out, of course, and see what he's about.
What are we talking about, Ramsey now, yeah?
Rambo, yeah.
Still, you know, some of the tactics of these managers, well, they want to keep they don't really want to keep these players, but they want to keep the players enough to make them believe that they're wanted in the team, and then he'll sign a contract, and then he'll maybe, you know, we can sell him, we can make money of him, a good bit of money of him if he doesn't want them. But, listen, we don't know what we don't know what he's thinking about. But I don't really fancy him. I really don't fancy Ramsey as an Arsenal player anymore. I think we need better.
I think it's quite strange in the fact that I remember months ago in the group, I said that when there was this thing of Wenger was going to go, I said the two biggest victims of this are going to be Jack Wilshere and Ramsey. And, you know, Ramsey's agent really sort of like thought he was playing a very clever game, trying to wait up to the last minute, thinking that Gazidis would panic. And then, of course, Gazidis resigned. He wasn't expecting that. And I think what's happened there is Raul Sagnier, he's probably had a look. He's probably called in Miss and Slat. He's probably called in Emery and Carcedo. They've sat down and had a big powwow and thought, you know what? This deal's 50 million quid over 4 years. You know, 50 million pounds, a lot of money. How many players can Sven get with that money? What can we do with that money? You know, Andrew's talking about he wants a wide player. We might need a new left back, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, Aaron Ramsey, when he had that one blinding season, and he was brilliant. But since then, he's sort of been always been the piece that doesn't fit, but they've tried to fit him and shoehorn him in. And I think because of that, he's sort of paid a price, if you like, in his own demise, if that makes sense.
But what is his best position, Steve?
This is the point, Jeff. I agree with you. I don't know. He's not. Is he better than Ozil? No fucking way. Is he better than Mkhitaryan? No fucking way. Actually, he's being played in that number 10 spot now. I think Emery's one of these managers is like, do you know what? I'll give you the rope to go and hang yourself. You wanted to play at number 10, I've put you there. I've had to sub you off because you're bloody awful.
I think it might be because he's very athletic. He does get about the pitch. Stats tell you that. And when Emery wants to play that high press, he can do that job attacking the middle area. But he isn't doing it, is he? No. I think he started out that way. He played very, very high.
Some of the problem we've got here, and I think if you look at Ramsey, he's probably more suited to the modern game or modern tactics than Mesut is. If you look at the way football's going, you know, the classic number 10. And I think actually you called it, Jeff, and it was really interesting when we were talking last year about whether a team would rather have Sanchez or Mesut. And people at the time said Sanchez because, you know, you can fit him in a lot easier. And if you look at the way modern football's going, right, it's more about having, you know, midfielders who are creative but can break up the play. So number 8, your Kevin De Bruyne type players. That whole number 10 isn't really a thing anymore apart from Arsenal and a couple of other teams. So if you look at Ramsey, and you know, Ramsey's probably been brought up in an era of football, even when 10s weren't a big thing here. And for me, his, you know, and I'm not saying he's as good as anywhere near, but if you look at players of recent years who are top quality, who he's similar to, you're probably looking at, you know, the classic number 8, like a Steven Gerrard. And Gerrard had a team built around him. So the midfield of Mascherano, who was there to basically break up play, and Alonso to do all of the neat passing and to basically give Gerrard that freedom. But if you look at Gerrard compared to Mesut, Gerrard and Mesut couldn't play in the same team because they'd still be attacking the same space, right? Mesut likes to constantly play at that same level, that kind of in the byline, that final third. And he'd constantly be getting into, say, Gerrard's runs, hypothetically. And I don't think they can play in the same team, but it's a case of when one of them plays and the other doesn't, you need to radically change the tactics of that team. You can't just shoehorn, you know, you can't expect Mesut to play deeper and you can't expect Aaron to play higher. Aaron's not going to be that kind of Ozil playmaker that we're used to and accustomed to. It's a bit of a tricky one because, as I say, if you look at how all the top teams play these days, they don't play that with that kind of number 10. It's a lot more combative. It's a lot more direct, and it's, you know, and so in a way, it's a kind of a paradox, though, no?
Well, yeah, but the thing is that if you look at the two players who's more adaptable, you can stick Ozil out on the right where he was for Real Madrid, and he'll do a bloody good job there, and he'll still affect the game and still affect the way it plays. But I think the telling comment you said is about Gerrard had that team built around him, and that's Ramsey's problem. He needs a team that's built around him, or he needs a role constructed for him like he's got with Wales, whereas he sort of plays free with Bale, and the rest of the team sort of like support them. He's not going to get that Arsenal. He doesn't seem to me to be someone who, for, you know, nearly £300,000 a week, can be guaranteed to play, you know, 45 or 50 games. So therefore, if that's the case, why would you design your team around him? And I think the thing is, they'd have looked at tapes, they'd have looked at what he's doing, they'd have looked at his contribution, and they'd also be looking at his performance stats and stuff. And I think they've just decided, you know what, actually, you're looking at 50 million quid here. for a 27-year-old player. Okay, you might come into his prime, but actually, what do you think of it? Where's he going to go? I mean, I know Josh has got some. He's sitting there patiently and quietly as a host, but I know Josh has got some thoughts. Where's he going to go? Because would he go to Serie A? Where would he fit in there? Would he go to La Liga? Would he fit in there? Or where else in the Premier League could he go? Where he'd start?
Perfect for Chelsea to replace Kante. Absolutely perfect for what Sarri's doing with him. Now, if you have a look what he's doing with Kante, Kante's now moved into that kind of weird box-to-box Frank Lampard kind of role. And he's getting caught high up the field and he's just not got the technique for it. You get Rambo in that position and it's like having replace Jorginho with Arteta and you've got Rambo's key season where he puts in 20-odd goals.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly the system that Sarri, and he would do crazy things there. But we're not going to play that way. That's the only thing I would say on that one. Kante, wonderful player. I can't disagree with that. But he's not got the eye for goal, the attacking prowess that Rambo's got. Put him further back and shielding your defence.
Would you swap him, boys? Would you swap him?
I wouldn't have Kante in our team. I don't think he's technically gifted enough for us. But we've got Torreira now. I don't think how we fit in two defensive midfielders like that in our squad.
Chelsea aside, because I think that's one place he could go. But I'm not so sure that actually Chelsea would want to sideline Kante, because then he'd be pissed off and think, oh, fuck it, I'll go to PSG then. Because he can basically pick whatever club he wants to go to.
Do you reckon he's that good? I can't see that. In an attacking point of view,
he's better than Kante, and that's how Kante's being deployed under Sarri.
Yeah, but I'm talking about Kante picking the team he wants to go to. I don't see he would start at United. I don't see how we would fit in midfield with Matic or with Pogba.
Similar to Fred.
He's not going to go to Spurs.
Or City.
No, he's not going to go. If he goes to City, he won't start, will he? No. They're going to drop. You're not going to drop De Bruyne to play Ramsey, are you?
Mahrez can't even get a game up there.
No. And this is another thing. Ramsey's got a bit of an ego. There's a lot of hints of him being at sort of the forefront of Wenger out with the Germans in the dressing room and him having punch-ups with Alexis Sanchez and fights with Robin Van Persie. So he definitely reckons himself. Well, take him out of Arsenal, where he's sort of like the most senior player, and whack him into Man United or Chelsea or PSG's changing room, and he's just another player, isn't he?
One that he was linked with was Juve, because they absolutely love a free. Mm-hmm. And he would quite well in Serie A.
So Juve haven't really replaced Marchisio. So Marchisio, as we know, kind of retired from Juve and moved. Did he go to Monaco or did he end up in Russia?
Russia.
So Marchisio's left and he really fits the mold of that kind of Marchisio. He is literally the best replacement for Marchisio I could think of. You know, they've got a few of them. Obviously, they brought in Chan on a free and they've still got, you know, your likes of Matuidi and a few other, and you know, Pjanic.
Kadira's on his way out as
well. Yeah, Kadira's definitely on his way out. I know one as well where I think you might want to laugh this one out of town, but I don't think it's also beyond the realms of, you know, possibility that someone like Real Madrid may come sniffing because, you know, you say that, but Luka Modric, he's 33 now, and Modric was lobbying hard to go. Modric wants out of Real Madrid, right?
I'm thinking that Rara Ramsey's not even good enough for Arsenal, never mind about Real Madrid.
Luka Modric needs to keep out of somewhere where he don't end up in jail. He's got a jail sentence hanging over his head for perjury in Croatia.
But that's irrelevant.
I mean, you're talking about probably the best player in the world in midfield at the moment. I don't think Ramsey's fit to lace his boots. I think the rumour I've heard is that Ramsey may go to PSG and Rabiot may come the other way. And that's because Emery fancies Rabiot. Whether there's any substance to it or not, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But for me, I think from his point of view, now he has to go on a free, unless Arsenal managed to do a deal where he gets sold to someone and they pay him quite a big wage, because he was standing to get 50 million quid out of that deal. And now if he goes on a free, okay, so what, he goes to AC Milan or Juventus and they pay him 180 grand a week and maybe a signing on for £3 or £4 million, it's still not 50, is it?
No. I can't see where he's going to get £50 million. The transfer fee of £50 million for Aaron Ramsey, I'd drive him there on my scooter. I swear to God, I would.
There was definitely talk of AC. So one of I work with a friend who's a huge AC fan. He's that we actually met out in Milan for the game a few months ago, and he's saying that the people who first told him about Gazidis are saying that the club have made sniffing. You know, the AC or Ache have been around at Ramsey, but I can, as you said, he's got an ego, right? AC are currently sitting in 11th place, I believe, in Serie A, and they don't look like they're going to get back into Champions League anytime soon. I'd be very surprised if he went there. He's, you know, there might be a disconnect between his ability and his ego. This is a man who, and I think we talked about it on the pod before, right? He's always been actually very open in saying, if I don't get made Arsenal captain one day, I wouldn't, you know, turn up, you know, I wouldn't mind going to somewhere like Barca or Real. And listen, I'm not saying he's going to go there, but it kind of shows you the kind of calibre where he thinks he's going to go. And I don't think he's going to settle for AC anytime soon. But if we could do some kind of deal with Juventus, for example, and one player, you know, if we're talking about getting some width in the team and we could get someone like Bernardeschi back, you know, from those guys, you know, that could be, you know, that could be a great signing for us. You know, with Costa, Dybala and those guys, you know, taking the wide positions now, I think, you know, there'll be room for manoeuvre there. Or even someone like Rugani, who's a fantastic young centre-back, who's just not getting into the team as much as he should do because they brought back Bonucci. That could make sense for us. But, you know, that would be perfect if we could do something like that.
Yeah, I think that would be ideal scenario. But one thing I want to pick up on was Aaron Ramsey and his ego. Don't all players at that level have an ego, other than maybe Mesut, who doesn't show it? Surely, to be that good at football, you're going to have an ego. Come on, Nicholas Bentner wasn't that good, but he had an ego on him the size of a small planet.
Yeah, I think there's egos and there's egos, you know, and if you're everybody's a professional athlete has got massive confidence in themselves and they've got, like, you know, huge mental strength and they've got an ego. But it seems, you know, Ramsey seems to have an opinion of himself that, you know, he's the equivalent of Mesut Ozil. I think a lot of that comes from agents. I think a lot of that comes from, you know, oh yeah, you've won, you know, three cups, the FA Cups, you've done this, you've done that. But it's, at the end of the day, that's all part of any professional job. You know, you go from a mid-level company to a big company, and you know, Fife would be the first to tell you, no, as soon as you get in a new dealing room, all the egos come out to play, and you have to sort of like find your space in the sort of hierarchy and start to work your way across and up it, don't you, Andrew?
That is true. That is true.
Would Aaron Ramsey even get in like the George Graham, Tim? The end of, you know, when we were strolling and we would definitely wouldn't get in the Invincibles team, would he?
He wouldn't get in the Invincibles. I definitely think he would have been a player that George would have liked, box to box. Don't mind. You know, gets forward late runs into the box, but what George wouldn't have put up with is piss poor defensive position and wandering from where he's supposed to be patrolling and defending. You know, that's the issue.
Plus his coffee house tricks, the flicks and the tricks that don't come off. You know, trying to do the Cruyff turn every now and again.
Well,
tricky players at that kind of era, you know, the ones that would like to have a little bit of a mess around. But I think, as you say, it also comes down to the manager he was under. I'm sure, you know, when Arsene came in, I think that's another thing with the ego. We saw, going back to the interview with Hector Bellerin and Lichtsteiner, where Hector's like thinking he's the best right back in the world. And Lichtsteiner's saying, well, actually, you know, it's not just about you, it's about the team. And perhaps that's something that's more of a mentality that's been brought in by, we know that Wenger was very, very motivational with his players, telling them that they were all, you know, the best that they could be or to play to the best of their ability, and a wonderful man manager from that point of view. So perhaps it's just something that, is he not her longest serving player?
Yes, he is.
With him and Bellerin. And perhaps that's just the case that, you know, he's been with us for nearly a decade.
It's very telling as well, isn't it? You've got Cech and another player as well came out last week and they were talking about, you know, of course, at Arsenal in previous times, there wasn't always that winning mentality. You know, Cech was doing that. He was doing that sort of that interview after he got blamed for giving the ball away with his feet, that he wasn't comfortable with it. And he actually was quite open, saying, you know, there wasn't a mentality of this, and now there is, and they're far more getting together as a unit. And, you know, you start to see players put their bodies on the line. You saw a lot of that against Watford. And, you know, Nacho got caught out a couple of times, but him and Rob Holding with Mustafi, even Bellerin, you know, taking the ball in the nads and all sorts of stuff. You never saw that under Wenger. And Mesut Ozil running 90 yards back to get the ball.
Question for the panel. Question for the panel while we're on Aaron Ramsey. Each of you, £20 million at Christmas, or would you let him see his contract out?
Who's the £20 million from?
It doesn't matter. Go on, take anybody. Would you take £20 million and let him go? Or you want to keep him, let him see his contract out?
I'd see him to the summer, personally. I'd keep hold of him. It's the 20 million versus holding him on for another 3 months. You know, he scores important goals at important times. And at that time of year, you know, his last kick of the game could be a winning penalty in a cup final, like we saw with Paddy Vieira.
I'd keep him as well, but I wouldn't play him like they're playing him now. I would keep him for Europa League. I would keep him to be an impact sub where he actually might come on and make a difference during games, where someone with fresh legs with the engine he's got, it might just, as Josh said, you know, rip the ball out from someone and smack it in the back of the net. Because really, for 20 million quid, you know, we're not really getting anything for it, are we?
We need to be pragmatic to kind of the situation that arises at the time. So if, let's say, for example, we decide that we're going to pull the trigger and hit the release clause of Christian Pavon. I don't know, someone we're linked to at Boca, for example, and that's in January, and we could use 20 million to free up for those funds, then I don't see why we wouldn't do it, because Ramsey's not in the plans. But then it's a case of, if Chelsea come in and put down 20 mil and it's a difference between them getting Champions League and us getting Champions League, then obviously, you know, don't do it. So I think it's just... without, you know, we know what the, you know, you saw in the transfer deadline day in January last year, right, having to get rid of Giroud to get to then get Batshuayi to Dortmund. There's a lot of merry-go-rounds that happen, and so just need to be pragmatic to that. I mean, I'm personally open to selling Ramsey if it means we can do some kind of deal which is going to benefit the team. I don't want to bring it back to tactics too much, but I did touch upon it earlier around the whole number eight. And listen, we've all talked about Mesut's style of play. Listen, Mesut's clearly one of our best players and one of the best in the league. But he, when we build a team around him, we're playing a kind of archaic, I say archaic, or a style of football that's kind of been dead for 3 or 4 years now. And stylistically, most teams would have a Ramsey-type player, obviously more ability. My only concern is if we do get rid of Ramsey, in doing so, we also get rid of the player which would enable us to play modern football. We don't have a number eight if Ramsey leaves, is what I'm trying to say. And so I do think, you know, if he goes, we have a deficit in that, in not just in capability and someone who can carry the ball and dribble and do all of that, but we actually have a real deficit in that we can't physically play the same way other teams can. So we can't set up with a kind of a key modern tactic. And so if he does leave, as well as kind of the left back Steve wants and the right winger I want and whoever Jeff and Josh want, I do think we need to look at another number eight in the summer, and that will, you know, that will be another dearth of quality that we need to look out for.
We do have too many ordinary midfield players at the moment. That's what I'm thinking.
But someone like Elneny, he can't play. And I don't, maybe Smith Rowe, maybe they're thinking about him, obviously. But you know, someone like Elneny can't do that role, right? So we need to be pragmatic, and I think we need to look at not just bringing in centre midfielders, but bringing in a range of tactics and skills in centre midfield. Like, you know, we've lost Santi now, so we've lost a huge way of our game was built around his ability to hold the ball and dribble in the centre midfield. We've lost that. We can't afford to lose both that and, you know, and the potential of a number eight and pin all of our hopes on kind of, you know, one guy who can break up play, one guy who can kind of pass, and then one number 10, because that's not going to be good enough. We need more than just those, that Xhaka Torreira.
But saying we've only got one number eight, that also says that we don't have cover for him. If Ramsey, a player that we know will put in probably 35 games in a season out of 50, but we've got cover in number 10. We've listed them already. Iwobi, you've got Mkhitaryan, Smith Rowe, if we're, you know, scraping the barrel for that kind of player type. Do we just think that perhaps he's a square peg in a round hole that we don't have cover for? And in fact, where we've been saying that Meza is the player that we don't really have cover and is unique, in fact, we've got plenty of cover for Meza Ozil. We don't for Aaron Ramsey. The only player, and I go back on a statement that I've been making for the past two or three seasons, would be on Ainsley Maitland-Niles. He can carry the ball and he can do that kind of box-to-box. He's got the engine. I'd prefer to put him out wide, to be honest, because he's got a decent cross on
it. We don't actually play, and as we're saying, square pit, but we don't actually play Ramsey to his key strengths, right? We don't play with an eight. Yeah, that's kind of the thing.
But the point is Emery's developing a system. He's inherited a team which is appallingly defensively. The goalkeepers have been dreadful. The ball's been given away willy nilly all over the place, and we've let in record numbers of goals. He's got to get us. His objectives will be get us back in the Champions League as quick as possible. Well, number one route to that is to stop leaking goals. You know, there's no doubt in the attacking prowess of the team and the goals there. It's not going to happen overnight. It might take three transfer windows before he gets the players he wants, and to work in the system he wants, which may well develop into other systems. And when he was at PSG and when he was at Seville, his team's morphed into several structures and tactics. I mean, you don't go win three Europa Leagues if you don't know what you're doing. So, you know, I don't think losing Aaron Ramsey is a massive problem. Yes, in the past, he scores goals. At the moment, he's bloody awful. And I think he's struggling to adapt to the system. I think he is a square peg in a round hole, but I think the problem is that he can't work out for himself how to play in that system. And it's not like under Wenger where players are left to work this shit out for themselves. They're getting coached, because you've only got to look at the difference that it's made in Iwobi getting some coaching. And they're getting told things all the time. You can see Carcedo's constantly on Mustafi's case to stay on his feet. So I think that's the issue. For me, I've just given, in my mind, the manager a free card this season. Whatever they do, they do. He's got so much to correct. And Aaron Ramsey, for me, has always been the piece that doesn't fit. And he's always been one of Wenger's favourites, so he's been shoehorned in here and there. And he has been reliable. But now we're playing in a system where it doesn't seem he can fit in there. So we're moving on. So, and obviously they've decided to redeploy the money. And, you know, maybe they will buy Pavan. I know Sanya is very keen on him.
Yeah, we'll have to see what goes on there. But I think we'll quickly jump over to the performance of Rob Holding before we go to Fires Forum. Because I know, Fife, you wanted to bring up, you know, we've had Socrates got that injury, that dead leg. It was Everton. He got that, came off, and Holding's come on. What do you reckon to his performances? Because he's come back with a bit of a bang, isn't he?
He has. He's one guy, a little bit like Iwobi, whose confidence has really dropped last season. But I think, you know, new management, new coaching, new tactics, he's looked fantastic at the back. He was probably my man of the match on the weekend. I thought Mustafi played extremely well in the first half, albeit was a bit silly in the second. But Holding was very assured, put in some fantastic blocks. He read the game well. And yeah, no, I think, you know, he really deserves credit for the way he's, you know, at such a young age, took such a big, what looked like a confidence knock last year, to bring it back round and to, you know, steady himself, and hopefully he'll challenge to get in that team even when Socrates is back. So fair play and fair credit to him.
Absolutely. Does anyone else want to go and sing Rob Holding's praises, especially after our first clean, what feels like our first clean sheet of the season?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I mean, he has done really, really well since he's been back in again. And obviously his confidence is higher now because he has been playing well. But these youngsters, I mean, we've had it with a few. Callum Chambers, he came in, did really, really well at the start, then had a terrible, traumatic time at Arsenal. Got run round the place, and he really never recovered since. It's all about how these young boys recover once they get that lack of confidence, you know, and how long it takes to build it up again. You know, it might take 6 months to get his confidence back, but it only takes one bad game to lose it. It's just overnight. So that's really what it is. And if he continues the progress that he's making. You know, listen, the kid's obviously got talent. You can see he can play the game. He's technically he's good on the ball. He's quite aggressive. He's a big lad, and he's got a bit of pace about him. So hopefully he can crack on, and he'll save us a few quid, doesn't he, as well.
Yeah, shows the quality of any player, doesn't it, Jeff, how they come back from any kind of bad patch of form, especially a young centre-back.
At this level, this is what it's all about. It's a mental thing, you know. You can't be a mug and play for Arsenal, you understand me? You've obviously got to have had that certain ability to get to that level already. But, the top level, it's about your mental ability as well, how you can keep concentration. And if you're not playing well, you can play yourself through it. You know, and being very young when they're playing, it is a little bit more difficult, you know, because they haven't had that experience.
I think the other thing that's quite interesting about him is it's now sort of like he's come on in, he came on in Everton, he played in a game where he essentially dealt with Deeney very, very well. And Deeney's, you know, probably one of the most aggressive centre-halves in the, centre-forwards in the league, who gets away with murder with fouls and elbows. And Holding just did to him what he did to Costa when we played Chelsea that time. And I think what I'm sort of sat there thinking is, okay, well, Socrates is injured, but can you actually play with Socrates in a two? Can you two play together so that Emery can actually turn around to Mustafi and say, you know what, you're not actually quite doing what Caicedo wants. You can't stay on your feet. So we'll drop you and we'll give these two a go together. And then, of course, because you've got the luxury then of being able to ease Koscielny back in if he can make it when he comes back from injury. And there's also, of course, lurking in the wings, Mavropanos as well.
We have a large number of young centre-backs that look really promising. And I think the right coaching, I think Chambers will be back. We gave him a long contract. Andrew, I think you had a story on the striker that we faced before you go to fight for him.
So, yeah, there was for whatever reason, and there was loads of ticket fuck-ups on the weekend, but I ended up standing in the North Bank with a friend, and there was a brilliant moment in the first half where everyone was giving Deeney a stick for being a fat bastard. And he decided to delight us by lifting up his shirt, and he revealed probably the most ripped eight-pack I've ever seen. and it was a brilliant moment. And all the fans were singing to him, tongue-in-cheek, "You fat bastard, you fat bastard." So at which point he got his water bottle, sprayed his aforementioned eight-pack, and then did what I could only describe as some kind of North African lady belly dance for us.
It was good.
It was actually great banter, and then he ran off to a round applause of you're a cunt, basically. So yeah, fantastic.
Funny, very funny. Yeah. But he was up for it though. He likes a banter, doesn't he?
He does. I think fair play to him. Listen, he probably knows what he said last season's out of order, and he's taken stick for it. And it's just one of those pantomime villains now. But it does add to the theatre of it all, doesn't it?
He also knows that he hasn't really got that much ability, but what he has got, he plays up to, and he plays that game he plays at the ultimate that he can play every single week, more or less, you know what I mean? Yeah. He's his hustle bustle, he makes a right nuisance of himself, and he's got good banter, it's good.
I was very impressed with him on Radio 5 Live, and he was on there with Ian Wright, surprisingly quite articulate and talking about other players with quite a great knowledge of the game. Probably somebody in the future could become quite a good pundit, actually.
We certainly got a face for radio. I'll give him that.
Maybe he became quite loquacious when he had a few months to do a lot of reading. I'm not sure why.
reading that do not pick up the soap book.
Something like that. That and the Holy Bible, I'm sure. So is this the part? So this is my first podcast of the season. Are we now going to Fife's Forum?
We are going into... Yeah, the eponymous Fife Forum.
This is amazing. Do we not have a jingle for Fife Forum?
We don't. We were hoping you were going to create some kind of diss track to put over it.
Right, we'll need to work on this.
I was thinking you were going to get your butler to ring it out, actually.
I'm going to have to look at my contract, because I think I've been at the podcast 5 years, and you have, Steve, right? And I don't even get a cup of tea in a mud about fucking but a forum, you know what I mean?
No. Right. Right, chop, chop, gentlemen.
Well, anyway, welcome to Fife's Forum, listeners. the first in a long series to be hosted by Fife himself. This week, I believe the question was from our Daniel. And Daniel's question to the listeners was, if you could pick any player, past or present, to come on the podcast, who would it be and why? So thanks for all the answers. We had Noir Confidential. I don't think that's a reference to Pinot Noir, one of my favourite wines. But no, Noir Confidential says, Freddie Ljungberg, because he's my favourite Arsenal player. And even if he is a guy who says, and he's a guy who says what he thinks, in brackets, I remember when he was talking about Lauren on Match of the Day. Although he doesn't tell us what he was saying about Lauren. So maybe that's one for another time. Guna in the USA podcast, hopefully Mike, he says, I hear Ebue makes a good podcast guest, but I'm 100% behind Frimpong. Third choice is Toure. Bobby Chakraborty says it would be Gallas, so I could call him a cunt to his face. I mean, I don't know how Bobby thinks we record this pod, but it's certainly not to our face because Steve's in Poland. And ask him what the fuck he was thinking when he picked the number 10 shirt. Jonas kindly says Thierry Henry, just to ask him why he went to wanky Barcelona instead of ending his career at the club who made him legendary. And Schwinn says, easy, Ray Parler. He's probably got a story or two to share. No, I can confirm Ray does have a story or two, and he likes to recycle them a lot, but he is hilarious. So thank you for your answers, listeners. Josh, who would or wouldn't you have on the podcast and why?
Well, I think the question is, if money is no object, it would be Aaron Ramsey, but I'm not sure that would happen.
What, you think it'd be too expensive?
I think it would be a bit too expensive in that regard.
You saw this coming. You saw this Aaron Ramsey coming, yeah.
He might want you to pay his phone bill.
So, Steve, what's your answer?
I think I'd probably like to get Charlie George on because I know he's got a lot of very dodgy stories from the 70s that both Jeff and I would love. The person I would not like to see on the podcast is Stuart Robson, unless it's his obituary.
Jeffrey?
I just can't believe you, boys. It's unbelievable. You do know the name of the podcast, don't you? You've got to have Dennis Bergkamp on, surely, haven't you?
Yes. And then...
Bergkamp is your man.
So thanks for that, guys. So apparently, and I've been told by a guy called Clock End Sniper, who I think is a friend of the podcast. I'm not sure I know. He's certainly a friend of Hollick. He says that Charlie George actually lives very close to where I live in Canterbury and frequents a pub not far from my house. So if I ever do see him in there, I'll let him know, Steve, and maybe I can try and drunkenly bribe him onto the podcast.
Well, that's more than Carl's ever done for, you know, his best mate Ian Wright.
Yeah, that was a bombshell. I remember that time he announced that it was, didn't his mum used to babysit Ian Wright or so, or there was some bloody hell.
Yeah, yeah,
what is Carl good for?
Not even running the trains on time.
I was gonna say buggering up your journey to work. That's it.
Sabotage. If I ever meet Carl, and I have met him once, but if I ever meet him again,
I'd be quiet because you may never get to work ever again if you carry this on. So, yes, there we go.
Right. Fife, thanks for taking over and hosting the Fife's Forum. And thanks to our listeners, of course, as well, for their wonderful comments and questions from them. And back over. Oh, sorry. We've also asked Fife, who would you like to see on the podcasts?
Tony Adams, actually. I once invited him on the podcast. We DM'd a little bit and he politely declined. So, Tony, if you are listening and you do want to come on, just slide into my DMs, mate, and we'll sort you out. So,
isn't it a sad indictment that the all the current players is not one that we'd want to get on the fucking podcast, you know?
I'd take someone like Lischteiner. Lischteiner would be interesting. I'm sure he's got some stories.
He would chew the fat.
If I could speak Spanish, I'd like to get Torreira on, because I think he's probably a mentalist on the quiet.
I think Czech would be an interesting one. They're all going to have Mark Ganella up to their, monitoring them like a, yeah. But so I don't think we'd get anything interesting out of the current lot. But I think certainly, Arsene Wenger, would we welcome him? Or is he too small for us?
Well, yeah, it's true. Depends what his fee's like.
I think he'd want more than a packet of custard creams. Also, I think he's probably got in his contract that he's currently still getting paid under, that he's not allowed to do anything that they don't approve of at head office. Very likely.
And of course, you've got someone like Wrighty. He's no shrinking violet when it comes to chewing the fat.
Ian Wright loves a conversation. I once met Ian Wright at 2 o'clock in the morning, drunk in the Carsies at Brown's in Covent Garden, which was a very flash club at the time. And we were discussing the what Cockney Reds were like. I can't tell you what he said on air because it was too offensive. But the whole gents' toilet in Brown's burst out laughing. And one of the biggest people laughing in there was Mark Bright, who was out drunk with. And there you go.
You spent a lot of time in Brown's, Steve, didn't you, in the Carsey?
Well, no, me and Mickey used to go in there a lot, but not the Carsey. Obviously, yeah. We had to go in there at times.
So I was out with... randomly had a night out with Steve Bold last November, and we're out to about 3 a.m. and I had to take the day off work the next day because I was that in such a bad state, and that never really happens. But he is very loose-lipped, shall I say.
And you know, he turned up to training, didn't you, straight away? He was there at 6 a.m.
He was stone cold sober. He was like a sergeant major.
What do you think he does now, Boldy? Just put the cones out because he literally don't do anything on the sidelines anymore, does he? I mean, he didn't do before with Wenger because he couldn't do it, but...
He smiles now.
Yeah, I suppose he's a little bit more peaceful.
He is very much assistant to the regional manager now, isn't he? It's a bit sad, but I guess they wanted to keep him on. But do you think he'll still be there next season or a year after? I'm not sure.
No, I'm not sure either. I think he's just obviously settling everybody in, isn't he, really? But, you know, you never know. They do like the old school, a little bit of the old school about, don't they? Just a little bit of news. I heard this week Neil Benfield had a triple heart bypass. Arsenal coach.
That doesn't surprise me, to be honest.
No, he was a little bit overweight. Yeah, but he's all right. He's fine. He had a triple heart bypass. Interesting.
Who was the old transfer negotiator, Dick Law. I bet he'd have a few stories. And he's American, so he can talk. They're all very good at talking, the Americans. So, yeah, he would be a great one to have on the podcast.
We could ask him about how he missed that flight as well. Who did that stop us signing?
Joel Campbell, when he left without the contract signed, you mean?
That was the one, yeah.
Or the one where, was it he pretended that he did it, or he turned up at the Arsenal-Tottenham game, so Tottenham fought. He wasn't in Madrid and therefore let Bale go to Madrid and then we signed Mesut. I believe that was Gazidis, wasn't it?
Because Gazidis was in Madrid doing the deal. Dick Clark was actually at the German team's base doing Mesut's contract, but he flew back from there just for that game so that Levy wouldn't know where he was.
Right. On that thing, yeah, Steve, do you want to go through the listeners' questions to us?
Yes, indeed. Here's one for Jeff. David Ziegler asks, how underappreciated is Nacho? He's an Iron Man, looks down the left-hand side and still gets forward in attack. What do you think of Nacho, Jeff?
I've said it for a while. I said for the last three, four seasons, pound for pound, Nacho Monreal's been our best player. He's always, he's over the season, he's give you maybe a 7.5 and 8 every single game right the way through, and more consistent than all of the others, I think, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, he certainly scored some important goals as well. What do you think of Nacho, Josh?
I love Nacho. I think he's one of the... I think he's probably our most technically gifted player, and I'm doing this purely on the video, if everyone's seen it, of him... lobbing an orange into the crisper drawer of his fridge, which is about a couple of meter, well, not a couple, but a meter and a bit up above him. And the technique on the boy, he's just absolutely superb, and best mates with Santi as well. So we obviously learned a bit with him.
Yeah. It was actually quite interesting. That's how we got him, because apparently he was recommended to Arsenal and they got Santi to ring him up and say, if you want to come to Arsenal, you better get over here because they're interested in you. I remember Sid Lowe writing a glowing reference for him before we even got him, saying what a consummate pro he was. And talking of writing references and writing stuff down, our dear old friends in America has popped up again. Do you lads think that Arsenal could have or should have made a bigger issue of a Mkhitaryan being, inverted commas, unwelcome in Azerbaijan? Should be a threat to boycott or forfeit the game to prompt action? We could likely manage the 3 points we might drop, but surely something more would have come from it. What do you think about that, Andrew?
on my very, very long bus trip home from Canary Wharf to Highbury that Carl fortunately set up for me. I did actually ponder this one to myself because I, when this kind of story broke about the kind of first broke when we first drew with Harry Abag that Mkhitaryan might not play due to kind of the political tension between Azerbaijan and Armenia, my first thoughts were, that is ridiculous, and how dare a team like Karabag play in UEFA Cup. And I've seen some comments on Twitter from some of the people responding to the question. People like Yorkshire Andy, who I have a lot of respect for his opinion, all kind of agreeing that it's ludicrous and that teams from Azerbaijan shouldn't play in the UEFA Cup because of it. I think the problem we have, though, is that I don't want to talk about politics too much on this podcast, but we look at this through the prism or through the lens of being extremely privileged politically, in the sense that we live in countries where they have never benefited from such a long peacetime. You know, we've never lived in such long periods of peace, be that in both our homeland security and in foreign politics. And I know that we have, you know, a few posh knobheads who are bellicose from UK arguing with a few posh bellicose knobheads from the EU right now, but realistically there's no real tension there, and we kind of look at it through that prism. But we have to realize that throughout the world there's huge tensions, and you know, it wasn't so long ago the president of America talked about banning people from specific Muslim countries from entering America. And so, you know, do you say fine, let's take the World Cup from America? There's, I believe, a large number of Muslim countries where people with Israeli passports aren't allowed to enter, but that didn't stop some of those from playing in the World Cup, you know, namely Iran, Azerbaijan, Saudi Arabia played in the World Cup, and you know, there was a few others. You know, when it comes to politics, people like UEFA and FIFA, they try to remain extremely apolitical. They see their force, and you can say there's a lot of corrupt people in these organizations, and I agree, but ultimately, you know, when we talk about the Corinthian spirit of the game and where FIFA and UEFA kind of all see themselves, as they try and take a step back from politics. And sometimes, you know, it backfires when you look at stuff like Poppygate with a few years ago. But they have tried to step back, and they try and use the game and big competitions to help influence for good. And I don't think it's necessarily UEFA's position to try and be some kind of political mediator between Azerbaijan and Armenia. And even though it's quite easy for us in the luxury of North London to say, well, it's outrageous that one of our best players isn't playing there, I don't think it's an argument that UEFA should be drawn into. And if you get drawn into that, there's going to be a whole host of arguments they should be drawn into. You know, why should people from, you know, until recently, why should South Korea be allowed, you know, or North Korea be allowed in competition? I mean, North Korea played in a World Cup when they wouldn't allow South Koreans in the country. So it's, for such a small game, you're going to open up a real can of worms. I think that there's a much bigger debate and conversation and dialogue to be held between the roles of football associations and governing bodies and that of, you know, how they mediate politics. But I think for such a minute game and minute affair in the wider scale of things, it's not something that they should get drawn into.
I mean, yeah, I agree. And I think the only thing is of course, the final's in Baku. So if we got to the final, it might affect us there. But I know that UEFA did say that they were back getting Mkhitaryan a visa. But it was Mkhitaryan himself that decided he didn't want to go. This is what the club said. So we'll move on from that. Noir Confidential again says, many people predict that some big name players will leave Arsenal in the near future because they don't fit the way Emery wants to play. If that's the case, who do you think those players are based on what games we've had so far? Josh, do you want to have a go at that, apart from the obvious candidate?
I think Aubameyang at the moment, for me, if I'm going to go big and high profile. I have been shouting that we should only be playing with one striker for a while. Looking at that kind of quartet that's sitting up front and all standing on top of each other, the ones that are out of form at the moment, you would say would be Ramsey and Aubameyang, and obviously Lacazette and Ozil are the two informed players at the moment in that kind of group. But yeah, I think it is one of those, it's two out of that four almost, because I don't think we can sustain shoehorning them into a team. I think if we've got someone like Mkhitaryan who's okay to drop out every so often, we can rotate out. But yeah, I think it might be a straight fight between Lacazette and Aubameyang for who may stay at the club.
What do you think, Jeff?
I think they'll keep both of them, to be honest with you. I like Lacazette. I think he's brilliant. I think he's I think he's underrated, really. I think we should get him into the get him into the game a lot more than we have done. But again, it's just getting him in between the lines, getting him in the box, because he's most probably our best finisher. He always, 9 out of 10 times, he'll make the keeper make a save. So I like him. Aubameyang, he's the only real pace that we've got, apart from Bellerin at the moment. You know, he's the only pacey forward that we've got, really. So I'd keep them both, and it looks like he's trying to fit them in the same team, which is fine. I think it'll be a choice between Ramsey, Ozil, Lacazette. Ramsey, Ozil, and Mkhitaryan, who will leave the club. Maybe even two. You know, and I'd like to see Ozil stay and be able to adapt properly to what the manager wants him to do, and first and foremost adapt to the Premier League and the you know, the tenacity of it. I don't think he's really settled in properly. He's a beautiful player, but I've said it on many occasions, I really don't think the Premier League is for him, unfortunately.
Just thinking of a player at the back as well, as we've kind of gone with attacking players, Kolasinac, I'm not really sure on him. Mm-hmm. I know we haven't seen him a lot because he's been injured, but I'm not really, even in pre-season he did play, there's that still that question mark on whether or not he's agile enough to, you know, because going forward he's great, he's unstoppable, but you know, when he's got to turn round and come back the other way, I think that kind of costs him, and he's not that quick.
I think everybody's missing the naked cock at a wedding here, Mustafi. I think Mustafi, given the fact he's got so much talent around him that needs a bit of experience building, Socrates, they're getting better and better every week. You know, Mustafi's also got a young family in Spain still. He could be one that goes. I think Mkhitaryan will go, not because he doesn't fit in Emery's system, but because he's got a clause in his contract that says we've actually got to give him a 60% wage increase if we renew his contract. So that ain't happening.
Who's that? Sorry, Steve?
Mkhitaryan.
60% wage increase.
Yeah, that's what I've been told. Yeah.
I mean, he's not worth that.
It's Fatty Raiola, isn't it? So
yeah, I think the one. So Mustafi, you know, he's fundamentally got the ability to be an very, very good centre back. You watch, you know, I've been watching quite a lot of Italian football this season, just to, you know, on 11 Sports, and you do kind of it makes you realise and appreciate actually Mustafi. Like Manolas, for example, we were linked to him quite heavily a couple of years ago, and then apparently Roma messed us around and we walked away from the deal. And I know a lot of people are still quite salty about that, but Manolas has actually been dog shit this season. I mean,
he's awful.
Terrible. And then you look at even Kualabi. I mean, apologies if I bastardised his name there at Napoli.
Good
player, but, you know, makes a lot of errors in his game management. You look at AC Milan or Inter Milan, they're not defending very well, particularly well. And even this new defence that Inter put together that everyone was raving about aren't particularly that strong. And so actually when you look at Mustafi, he does stupid things and makes stupid mistakes. Like, you know, he kept giving away needless free kicks on the weekend because he was just aimlessly jumping into the back of Deeney. And I know what he's trying to do, but he was doing it so often that he was just giving away free kicks in dangerous positions. But actually when you watch the way he defends, he is, there's something about him that he in some parts of his game excels as a top defender. It's just with him, for me, mind farts and silly errors, but it's not as if he's a consistently bad player or average player. He's a good player that lets himself down.
Because he did go for 28 games without conceding a goal when he first came to Arsenal. He had Santi in front of him. And yeah. For me, there's a good player in there that if Casido's allowed to have enough time with him, he might be able to get those brain farts out. But I just think the issue with family still in Spain and Emery being not having, you know, 3 years to fuck around, that might well, and him being something you could cash in, he might be someone that goes. And that brings us on really to our next question from Miko, which I'll chuck to Andrew, seeing as he was talking about defenders. It says, in hindsight, would you rather have spent the Aubameyang money for a top-class defender? There's no doubting Aubameyang's class, but he looks out of place on the wing. I feel that Lacazette suits our pressing style better, and he started his second season in great form.
I certainly, yeah, it's tough because Koscielny's injury came after we signed Aubameyang. And, you know, I would rather have Koscielny and Aubameyang in this team than a top centre back and no Aubameyang. I do think, you know, it's tough. It's very tough, and we are shoehorning too many players in the wrong. But I think that realistically, if we at the time took the money and we didn't sign someone like Aubameyang after Alexis left, there could have been a real mutiny in the stadium last season, and the club had to do it. That said, I do want to see us invest big money, and I think the one player I mentioned earlier was Rugani, who I think is one of the top centre-backs coming through in Serie A, who's just not getting the game time he should be at Juve. So if we could get him, that as part of, say, a Ramsey deal, that for me would just be, you know, that would be nirvana.
If we don't get a Ramsey deal, Jeff, you were talking earlier on about holding. Who do you see as your ideal pair out of the centre-halves we've got?
I think, you know, we definitely need a top quality centre half. I'd go and spend big. I'd go and spend the budget on a top quality centre half. I think even last season and the season before, I don't think we've got no problems scoring goals. Our problems have always been conceding goals. And that was obviously down to the way the manager wanted us to play. He concentrated too much on just attacking and entertaining. And that was to our detriment in the end. But if we can go and, I mean, look what Liverpool did. I mean, I didn't fancy him too much, the centre-half that they purchased from, was it, from Southampton? What do you call that boy?
Van Dijk,
yeah. And I thought that was a mad bit of money. Was it 60 or 70 million or some mad money?
75 million quid it was.
Yeah, but you know what? The way, I mean, he's obviously been influential, very influential in calming everything down at the back there, because they was piss poor a couple of years ago, wasn't they? And they got to the Champions League final last year. And they've now got a really, really quality team. And that starts from the back. And if we could go and spend big money on a top quality centre half that is guaranteed to give you that spine every single week, you know, and he can be a leader on the pitch, then I think the goals will take up the other end will take care of themselves.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got a couple. Bobby Chekibuti is back again. He says, "Yeah, this is a quickie for Josh. Do you think Matt Macey will be our number two or number three keeper next season?"
Oh, I think he might be sold. He's not doing bad at Plymouth. He's certainly he's keeping his hands warm, should we put it that way? Yeah. They've not got a great defence. But I think with Emil Martinez still there as well, and if he's happy in his current position, I think Cech's just going to move backwards down the pecking order until he goes into, coaching. Probably a coaching role. Yeah.
So we've got one last question from Stephen Barr. I'm guessing he may be American. Possibly he's also not aware of planning laws in London. He says, how long do you think it'll be before Stan builds a Walmart next to the Emirates? It'll be a very long time because there's no space there, Stephen. The last question Sid Arthur is about Ramsey, and I think actually we did that to death earlier. So that's all the listeners' questions. I'd like to thank everybody for sending their questions in. And I'm now going to hand you back to Uncle Josh to do the rest of the podcast.
Thank you very much. And we will finish off with everybody's shout-outs. So let's go to Fife first, and I'll go to Jeff and Stephen. I'll finally do my one. Fife, I assume it's not to Carl.
No, I won't give Carl a shout out this week. I think he's had enough love from the pod today. My shout out's to a friend of mine, Chris Howard, Suburban Gooner Chris, who very kindly helped sort some of my friends out, or friends of friends who were over from Hong Kong. So three of the guys meant to go to their first Arsenal game, and also he's running the Amsterdam Marathon very soon, and I believe he's raising money for charity. So if you want to have a look at his Twitter, as I say, it's Suburban Gooner, and he does a daily pod. A daily blog in the morning. His writing is terrible, but I love his ideas and his enthusiasm. So give him a follow and give him some love.
Excellent. I think I said Jeff next. Can't remember.
There it was me, mate.
Just shout out.
I've just done the pin in on Twitter. And the first one I come to is Mr. Robot Take 2. A guy called Alonzo Spencer.
He's a big regular in the chat box on their YouTube live shows as well as Alonzo.
Ah, good lad. Well done. Well, go and follow him, boys.
Yeah, excellent stuff from Alonzo and, of course, you, Jeff. And Steve, here's your shout-out for this week.
My shout-out is for a guy called Mikołaj Duszynski. And Mikołaj is a Polish lad, and he works for EA Sports. He's a programmer and a game maker and a game player. Big Arsenal fan. Pretty sure he spends his time jetting between Warsaw and London. And you can find him at Misiek_86. Top lad, and loves his football and loves his games. So if you like games and football, then Bob's your uncle.
Excellent. I will give mine in a little bit of a way of my last follower, but it's actually my second to last follower, to Akash, who's at 5 minute final. Was having a little bit of a chinwag about EFL with him during the week, and it was really interesting to get some decent conversation from that as well. And I believe that is everything for this evening. We are back on Thursday with the Europa League tie against
Karabag,
isn't it? Of course. I was meant to be hosting that one, but unfortunately I've had to step aside. So I believe Danny is sailing the good ship ABW that evening with, I believe, Ellis, and I want to say the man who's had more mentions than I think he's ever had, Carl, on that. And at that point, I will say to all of you, thank you for listening and good night.
Thank you for having me, cheeky buggers.
Fuck you, Carl.
And here's some more shenanigans after the podcast ended.
Well, well done, gentlemen. That was nice and smooth, wasn't it? You done well there, Josh, by the way. Good.
Yeah, day. Really.
I then realised when I was going through the thing of who's on next week. Oh, shit, we didn't do a preview for Europa League, but whatever.
No, it don't matter, mate. It's fine.
We'll do a review on it, so it'll be fine.
That was very, very good. Yeah. Very good, Josh.
Well done, boys. Listen, I'm going to slip off and get some food.
Jeff, I enjoyed you. God bless you, with Mike and Andy, that was really good.
Yeah, it was all right. They're good lads, aren't they?
Yeah, he said, Jeff can do it this week, but he's on with you. And he said, we've been trying to get him on since we started. I said, I'll ask him if he can go and do yours instead. They were over the moon.
They've asked me for ages, like a year or something like that. And I've just always been out partying or doing something the week before. Yeah, living the life, man. Good. God bless you, boys.
Cheers, Jeff.
Great podcast. Bye-bye, boys.
Cheers, Jeff.
See you later, Jeff.
Yeah, that was really good. Good to have you back, Andrew.
I'm not sure whether
calling you Fife or Fifey is disrespectful or not. I know some people don't like being called by their surname, but most of my friends, I call them by their surname, weirdly.
Oh, it's fine. Most people call me Fife or Fifey or Andrew, whatever.